Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front-end web design and development. I'm Dave, Hardstop Edition. Rupert with me is Chris, Green Booth Courier. It looks so good. The booth is still looking so good. Oh my gosh. My office is not done. They did the tape and floated the drywall. Roof repels water excellently. It's top tier, A-level repelling of water, so now water doesn't go in, or snow, that we have that now in Austin.
Leaves,
water and snow don't go inside sand, the building. But anyway, yeah, drywall is coming. It's so close, and I'm like, I'm just, you know, it's that last 10% of the project thing where it's so close. I am just like fixing to move furniture in there. You know what I mean? Like, it'd just be like, come on, guys, let's go.
It might actually be 10%. In actual construction, because you pound the last nail and it's done, you know, or whatever. I don't know if that's how it works. It feels like in software, though, when you're so close, that means you only have 80% left, you know?
Yeah,
it's totally incredible how long the last mile takes.
Well, and that's it. And like, now it's rainy this week, right? And so like the drywall mud is like drying slower, you know, and I'm like... just walking circles in my backyard, like, you know,
yeah,
just pacing, you know, like, oh, hey guys, you ready? You done? So they don't appreciate it. But
anyway. I look forward to you having that. That's pretty cool. We got some questions from users. You are users, everybody out there.
Hey, Jeez. User. Welcome, user.
I always hated the word user anyway. Like, why is that a necessary thing to say? They're just people.
Gosh. Yeah, isn't that weird? Like, you like, I don't know, you like abstract people. Just like, we already had a word for people that visit your website. Yeah. It's people. But I guess you're trying to like distinguish between active, I guess, participants and inactive.
Yeah, has account or not. I don't know. So some of you people out there who've written in, we really appreciate that. You know, they trickle in these days. They're always good, but the volume is lower. You should just realize that you can do that. In fact, I think we're going to roll out a new design for the show, or the website. We'll make the button bigger, you know?
Yeah.
Like 11D. Have you, like Zach's joke on the documentation button on 11D. It's almost so big that it does it injustice, because
it sort of stops looking like a button.
Yeah,
because it's 100% wide, and
but once like you know 50 it's there, VW, you know what you're looking for. It's hilarious. Yeah, it is about 50 VW, isn't it? If not more.
Yeah.
documentation button. It's very big. so shall be our send in a question button, because that is still the meat and potatoes of this show. Let's do one, and then we'll do random crap, and then we'll do more. Just to prove that we actually answer questions on this show.
See, people doubt us. Look at us. Glenn Dahman writes in, I really like the look of headless WordPress and would like to give it a go on a client site, but I'm not sure how to make the case to management over a standard WordPress build. Mm. The freedom of it gives devs on the front end it could be really powerful, but there's lots of templating stuff WordPress gives you for free. So I wonder if it could slow you down. I think there used to be SEO concerns with retrieving site data this way, but my understanding is that has been rectified. Have either of you tried out headless WordPress, and can you give advice? Well, so I did try headless WordPress once, and it was like working through an API. My issue was not everything came back. So like things in custom fields and stuff like that. And it was like three or four daisy chains between the person who worked on the WordPress and me. So I had a few problems getting the right properties back to render even like a one-to-one of what was currently being rendered. So there is that risk. So I would say that, like, just because you ejected from WordPress templates doesn't mean you're done with WordPress. You might still be doing a lot of WordPress. So
yeah, I like the idea of it, because I don't like the idea of compromising on CMS quality just because I want to like be Jamstack or something, or I want to build a React site or a Vue site or something. I don't want to be like, if I made that choice, now I have to use no CMS or a CMS I don't like, or a bad CMS or something. And I like WordPress and I like Gutenberg and I like the ability to do that, whatever I want to do with my front end. The slow you down part is like, maybe, I mean, anything will slow you down if it's new technology to you and you don't, your muscle memory isn't built up for it and all that stuff. So maybe it'll slow you down, but maybe it won't. Maybe you have a whole bunch of React devs on your team and they're way faster with that. So if you gave them APIs that they could build out a front end faster than they would be able to if what was weird to them was PHP and WordPress and stuff. So that slow down stuff is totally relative. That's a who knows how to answer that. I know what, you know what I'd look at, and this is, I think they've been a sponsor. I know Automatic invested in them for a minute, but it's frontity.org. It's a React framework for WordPress. You didn't say the word React. I'm saying the word React, I realize here, but that's kind of a common use case is want to build a JavaScript front end and it will hit the APIs for the data needs and builds the front end. So it's a lot of that glue, you know, it's a lot of that, like, we've got this set up for you, rock and roll. We'll give you both the WordPress side and the React side. And here you go. It's probably worth a look.
There's also, Next is pretty advanced, Versal. Hosting with them.
Certainly Gatsby has connectors.
Gatsby, yeah, I think it actually tries to help you make that jump pretty, like, well. But I was just going to call it Next because I think you can, like, isn't there, like, a flag where you're, like, pre-render this or whatever, and it's just will spit out the page. Like, it's like you made the API call at build time and not at. Yeah. So if your SEO is a worry, that would, like, solve that. So, and you probably get something a little more stable than your WordPress stuff if you do it that way, if you like do it on build, you know. But then if people are editing WordPress, how do you trigger builds? Ah, now you got another problem.
Right.
I don't know if it's panacea, but I think the best thing you can do, and this goes back to the mantra, just build websites. Mm-hmm. Play the clip, Chris. All right. Yeah. Like, you know, this would be a place where I would do it on my own site first, or like or even the whatever the corporate site, and kind of like learn the hard bits first, and before I pitch it as a client project. So,
right,
that's what I would say.
Probably, you know, what seems a little unsolved about all this is that you got two sites to maintain now. You got the whole build process and the whole banger for wherever you're building the front end. And you have to keep up a WordPress site somewhere.
You know where I could see like this being solid, solid gold is if you're a company and you have a lot of WordPress sites that you manage yourself, or like, let's say you manage a bunch of political sites because whatever, it's political, it's politics season, you know, like, You manage a bunch of these sites in a WordPress MU multi-user system, and then you just build your front ends however you want. That would be very cool because you have one base code base for everybody you're operating on, and then each little individual, you know, politician, this is just an example, it doesn't have to, it could be restaurants or whatever, but like that each individual politician could like have kind of their own vibe, but it's kind of the same engine behind it. I think like that would be a situation where you could pitch
it. This is not theoretical. People do this all the time.
If you're working on a WordPress multi-user, like now you got a bunch of data, you got a bunch of local hosts, you got a bunch of like, it's that's arguably, I think, harder than a bunch of decoupled front ends. So I think that.
MU thing is super cool. Universities do it, you know, because it's like every department has their own URL, even really, or subdomain or something. Usually, it's like a very different site than the parent site of the whole university, you know. And those departments want to do whatever they want, but they can still be housed by one MU.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. Then you throw WP GraphQL in there, you know, and then everybody's GraphQL and
Bingo, bingo.
I know you don't love it, but that's the kind of thing that like, at least then it's consistent.
GraphQL, Chris, I just don't love the 17 things I need to use GraphQL.
Tell me about it. I wrote a post like, I don't know, it must have been a year or more ago now though, that is kind of like the tooling free version of GraphQL. Like you can actually just write a fetch against a GraphQL API because it's not And it's not totally ungraceful, because what you send in the value of the post is like a template literal string of a GraphQL query.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, well, it may not be like syntax highlighted super nicely. It may not like lint real well, but like you don't have to have Apollo client, you know, you don't, or something, you don't.
But then you kind of want Apollo client so you don't like murder your database by accident, you know? And
Right. Yeah. It's not like long-term thing, but if if there's a GraphQL API sitting out there and you need to make one request against it, you don't have to tool your way out your butt to.
Yeah. No, that's
true. To get it. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by CodeUp. So you're looking for a new job? You're looking to get into this coding thing? Maybe you're listening to this podcast because you're trying to get into the world of web design development and all that stuff. So CodeUp teaches software development and data science in 22 weeks. So the program includes technical skill development, like learn the job is, how to do it, professional development, career coaching, and job placement support. Because, of course, there's more to this, like, I want to switch careers than it is to just, like, learning how to program. You also need to learn how to interview and, you know, how are you going to get that first job? They'll help you with all that. In fact, get hired after graduation or they refund your tuition. Pretty darn cool. Learn more at codeup.com. Their online classes are starting soon, so you apply for that, you know? Get a job or get your money back. Pretty sweet. Thanks for the support. Here's a game. Open up your RSS reader. What are you using on your Mac now? Do you have one?
Oh, well, so Feedbin. Still Feedbin.
Feedbin rules.
I have Reader 4 on my iPad that I use on my iPad. I was using the Feedbin client, but it was weird and it was hurting my wrists because I have baby wrists. I have fragile baby bird wrists, Chris.
Sorry, buddy.
I'm a big boy, but I have baby wrists, apparently.
Yeah.
So Reader has like it has a button right by my thumb that I can go to the next article. And that's so critical.
Oh, ergonomics. You got it.
Because I was like having to like swipe through every article all the way to like trigger the snap to switch, you know? So using Reader, I guess I could use Reader on my Mac, but I'm really happy with the web client.
Reader on my phone is sweet. Reader, and the switch from 3 to 4, I think 4 is anyone, is big and you should get 4.
Yeah, always have 4. So
4 is
and
good.
It's worth it too. It's like supporting a small dev shop, you know, like it's sort of like why you pay for Tweetbot or whatever. I mean, it's worth it. If you love RSS, it's worth $5 or whatever I paid for it.
It's my favorite thing lately. I never look at the Feedbin UI ever because I have Reader on my phone, which syncs through Feedbin. And then on my Mac, which I like to read on my computer too, I use NetNewsWire, which has a pretty good iOS app too, but I like Reader better. Mm-hmm. But NetNewsWire on Mac is good. I really like it. And it connects to Feedbin too. And Feedbin syncs all your stars and stuff. So I have all these apps because I go in and out at different apps like anybody else. You can do that with Feedbin because it has these great APIs. So even though I never even look at Feedbin, they're the ones I pay because they're the home base for it all. And I can open NetNewsWire on my phone, even though I don't use it that often. It's 100% in sync with any other app I open. All my unreads are there. All my favorites are there. All that. I love that.
Chris, I got some breaking news, bud.
Yeah?
There's a Reader 5.
Is it 5? Maybe that's what I meant. There's one dumb, but the only reason I said this is because if you're reading a post in 4, I think maybe it was 3 or 4, and it had an embedded code pen in it would be all squished up to the left because the way that there something was weird in Reader and it was stripping out aspects of the iframe in there, and they fixed it in the new version but have not backported the fix.
So
upgrade, please.
I wonder what it was. One of them was I was gonna see if I could use like Reader that I already own on my Mac, you know, because I have the M1.
Do they have
I can do that now, but
can you really run iOS apps on it or whatever?
Yeah, they advertise that, but I don't use it, but that would have been one I would try. I like the web client because I'm reading websites, right? and I want to read websites. So I want to get to websites as quick as I can. So, you know, when you open a new tab in an app and then you're like, well, that was cool. I want to share it. Oh no, where am I? Like, how do I get the URL or whatever, you know, without all the junk. So,
okay. So you can star things in Feedbin, and that has made its way into Reader and NetNewsWire and anything else. Pretty much anything has some kind of liking mechanism, right? So the game is open whatever your thing is and tell me, without too elaborate of an explanation, the last three things that you
like. Here you go. You ready? It's been a while since I've powered through here. Here it is. You're going to love it because two of them are The Verge. Here we go.
I knew it. I knew they were going to be The Verge.
Okay, Dave likes The Verge. Okay, deal with it.
Loves it.
Star heart, favorite it up. This one is this maker built a working Batman grappling gun in only a year. So it's this guy who made, he was obsessed with the idea of like building a Batman grappling hook on your, that attaches to your wrist, you know, and like, and
yeah, but it can really fire to the top of a skyscraper
to a tree. And he like hoists himself up, like up a tree and stuff like that. It was like cool enough. I clicked on it. And but as a result of that, I now have all these like maker videos and stuff like that in my YouTube algorithm, and it's kind of outrageous. But it's cool because I don't know. I watched like this 30-minute video on this epic $30,000 puzzle or something like that, and I'm just getting the best YouTubes, and I think it's probably from that. What's that?
It's number two.
Google reportedly asked employees to strike a positive tone in research paper. I don't know if you've read this, but and this gets into hot drama here, but Google had a bit of a breakout with like, I forget her name. Oh, I'm blanking on her name. I'm going to just peek in the article.
It was like, oops, we fired you and now we regret it because we got bad PR.
Well, yeah, GitHub also did that. This was a while ago. Timnit Gebru, she's an AI ethicist, and she like wrote a paper.
Oh, I remember
that
this
said,
one.
Hey, large language like algorithms, AI, like basically like large networks of AI are bad, actually. They like produce substandard results, and they like,
and didn't, it wasn't her job to be a watchdog for that kind of thing.
That's what she's hired for. And and she was fired by a guy named Jeff Dean. I don't know any of the resolution here, but there was apparently a sort of a policy within Google to take care to strike a positive tone and remove all references to Google products inside the like internal how to write a paper. And I get that it's like your job, but I also like, for the sake of science, like if you're a company that produces a large language, you know, neural network or whatever, you might need to like address that. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, obviously, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really comment on any of these stuff. But it just has this smell of like, oh, we're doing bad, but we don't want it. It's like big tobacco-y, you know. It's like, oh, you know, whatever. AI is good for kids; gives them healthy bones. You know, it's like that's the vibe I get from it. So, yeah,
I see what you mean. Okay, article about that. What was the publication?
That was The Verge. Yeah, The Verge. Cool. And then
next,
can I do two more? Is because
sure.
Yep. 2020 Reads by Frank Camaro. I love Frank, and
a new Frank post. Yeah, I missed it.
He just, you know, he wrote all these books he read, and they're great. And one thing I loved about it was he got into something and then he just read all of them. Like he like read Octavia Butler and then just read all of them, and then he read James Baldwin and then he just read all of them. Like
I don't see it on his site. He must have a secret RSS club.
It was good, but I just liked that it was just very like, I don't know, his reading was sort of like you could see the like veins of knowledge he was trying to mine. And I thought that was cool. And then the other one's best anime of 2020, which I then posted about an anime called,
tell me
what? Right now. Oh, you got to watch this anime, Chris. It was on my blog.
What is it?
It's Keep Your Hands Off Eizouken. Eizouken. And that's on Eizouken. It's on Crunchyroll, but it's basically about these three girls in high school who decide to create an anime club, or they don't want to be in the anime club because those people only watch anime. They want to make anime. So they create the Eizouken, which is film studies club, and they create this film studies club and they make anime, these three girls. And it's basically like these girls start this creative shop, you know, and I'm just like, this is parallel, you know, but like, cause there's like one who's like kind of, you know, she's the boss girl and she's kind of funny cause she's kind of like this Yakuza kind of manipulator. It's kind of great. But then there's this, one girl who's like the animator and she just really cares about like things feeling right and looking right, you know, and it's kind of like the designer basically. And then there's one girl who's like in the settings, so she's like making sure the whole underlying thing makes sense, you know, and you can think of that as like a developer. It's only 12 episodes or something. I think there's a whole other season coming, but it just was awesome. It was like a good fun anime
that's romp. Great. I go on little anime, you know, benders or I watch like four or five
of them, you know, and then you're just like, that was great.
Yeah, that was great. It's very meta, right? An anime about making anime.
Yeah, and that's, I think that was like the thing in my best anime that stood out. I was just like, what? I don't meta. But then I was like, yeah, okay. Because these posts are actually good for me because I like don't keep up with the anime. I like it fine enough, but I don't keep up with it. So it's cool to like, oh, okay, this is like enough. Somebody was like, this was the best this year. So it's enough for me to be like, okay.
There are certain aspects of it that this probably makes me feel like an ignorant jerk, but there's like sometimes the length of them are weird and then they have super sprawling intros and extros.
Yeah, outros.
So it's like you try to, like, it's hard to get into a flow sometimes with me and it changes from show to show. And then if I feel like you never can you half watch an anime because it's just too, they're like, you have to just, I don't know, not that the plot is so intricate, but there's enough like cultural difference between what I normally watch and them that I have to sit there and like get the details right. Otherwise.
Yeah, no, they'll like surprise, this person's an alien, you know, and you're like, what? I missed it. But no, it's the like anime formula is like, there's almost like only 10 minutes of new footage every 25 minute episodes. It's cause it's like 2 minutes of recap. You know, the intro, which is pretty rocking, and then like the 10 minutes of new content, and then the outro, which is like 4.5 minutes, you know. So, like, that's the formula over and over.
And then, but then you get a good one, and you're like, that was so good, it was so super original, and a story I've never heard before, super engaging, got my blood going.
That's how I felt about Eizouken. Like, I just was like, this is just, I haven't watched, this is good. I feel good. And then like, sorry, this is not an anime podcast. Well, maybe it is now, whatever, 2021 vibes only. you know how like when people say New York is a character in the film or whatever, and it's like a thing, or it's like a character in Seinfeld, you know, New York is kind of a character. This was the first time I've like watched a show or anything and was like, wow, right, the city is actually a character. There's this fictional city of Shibahama, and it's like a water town, but clearly some global warming event has happened, but no one really talks about it. And then like the town's like been ravaged by like modernity, basically. Like, so it's like kind of this like capitalism kind of created this. It's anyway, but it's never addressed. And so you're just like, somebody explain this to me. Like, it's weird enough, you know. It's, or like if you ever watch like a, I don't know what like something really radical, like Evangelion or something, where or Akira, you know, and you're just like, whoa, that took a turn. Why? What is it? You know, like, I think, you know, those, it's those situations where you're just like, I want to know more about that. It's too weird. I need to know. So anyway, I did mine. You, what do your likes? What likes do you have in the feed bin?
One was from today. Jeremy Keith post, get safe. It was kind of a joke. Or, I mean, it's a pun title, but it was about explaining the difference between get and post in a way, okay. You know, very fundamental concept of the web in that, you know, a lot of the web, like a link and like an href, right? That triggers a get request in browsers. And I think it's, you know, very possible to be a web dev today and just really just not think very much about get and post. And it's, and you know, he makes the point right in the first sentence, really, that there's also put and delete and patch and stuff. And I feel like maybe like Rails devs were used to that because there was some, you know, mappings to those type of things and routes and stuff, but most people don't. Most people, even whatever, yeah. You, if it's not get, you post, yeah. You know, whatever.
Yeah. I did use the 7 verbs recently, but I don't want to brag.
Oh, you did.
Well, once you know them, good you're job. Like, oh man, they thought of it, yeah, didn't they?
Might as well. They
figured it out a long time ago.
They did, in that, but that, the, and then the pun of the title is that get requests shouldn't like do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have like, you know, question mark post equals red. Destroy. Or something, and just by virtue of hitting that thing, yeah, you would never do that. You know, for various reasons, because browsing the web should be safe. You know, hence get safe. But it made me think about like that would be a good interview stuff. Like, I'm not trying to be too esoteric, but this is pretty fundamental stuff about the web. I could see writing an interview question about, at least about get and post. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the whole thing, but like, explain to me the difference. Why would you use them? How would you use them? What HTML mechanisms invoke them? Yeah. That type of stuff.
Even just like basic understanding of CRUD or like, you know, create, read, update, delete, you know, like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Why? Or, you know, like... How would you go about doing this or something?
I favorited one on the Viget.com blogs from Trevor Davis.
I think their
blog is, they have really good
blog posts. I have a whole web agencies folder. So
yeah, I think they're still an agency. I mean, whatever they're doing, they're still blogging. And the post is what I love and hate about Tailwind CSS. And it made me like, oh, I love that. I want to hear what another developer thinks. The nuances, the like, I've actually used this technology on a bunch of projects and I want to talk about things I like and things I don't like about it. It's the best kind of blog post there is, you know? It's not, you know, and I was just going off about it because I feel like I have like 10 emails in my inbox right now that are like, I've got a guest pitch for you, Chris. It's, you know, and it'll be about Tailwind. It'll just be like, how to set up and use Tailwind on a project. I'm like, I don't want that. That's not a good blog post. I hate to be a dick, but it's like, that's what the docs for Tailwind are for. The docs for Tailwind are to tell you what it is, how to set it up on a project and all that. And it's going to stay up to date because that's what docs do. My blog post about the basics of Tailwind will be out of date in like a month, you know? And besides, I don't want to read that blog post. I want to read what you, the developer, like or don't like about Tailwind, you know? And that's what this is. And I think they do a good job of that. It's that really like, I'm a developer, you're a developer, let's talk about it.
Yeah. You know? Well, this one blew up, got retweeted, and people, I don't know, people had big emotions about it, but...
Oh, did you search the URL on Twitter?
Well, yeah. Well, I think I saw some people agree with it or such as, and then very passionate Tailwind users were very.
That's what I don't want. I don't want your hot takes on it. Write as many words as Trevor did, and then I'll read that. You know, anytime I mention it on the site, they're like, you didn't learn from the mistakes of the past. All classes like this are bad. And you're like that. Ah, I know what you mean. I actually don't love Tailwind either, but not because it's bad technology. It's just for various reasons. It doesn't click with me, etc. I could write a post like Trevor too. I'm trying to avoid giving you my hot take because that's what I'm bitching about right now. The hot takes aren't interesting. You know, like that's not enough. You're basically wrong if all you have is a hot take on this because it's more complicated than a hot take.
Even if your hot take is like, it's the best ever, you know, it, like
just as bad.
Like Saul's CSS, bad. You know, or whatever. Anyway, I that's a great, like, I actually haven't read it all the way through. I just saw the kerfluffles about it, but I don't know. I have my own sensibilities and feelings about stuff, but like, yeah, I don't know. I should read this because I think I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's cool. And there was a good Eric Bailey post that compared Tailwind to BEM that I thought was pretty well done and stuff. You know, this stuff kind of requires some nuance. You know, here's a bit of nuance that I think is very important, is that I think Tailwind goes from bad to good with post CSS at the end of it. And even that, I have lots of new, you know, like that I have strong opinions about having how you set it up correctly and watching for edge cases and stuff like that. But when you do it right, if you have it right, the best that you possibly can, the output from Purge CSS, you know, and looking at all your templates and figuring out the classes it uses and JavaScript files too and all that, and reducing Tailwind to only the tiniest amount of classes used, that's when it gets compelling. It's not the authoring. I don't like the authoring. I like the output. Atomic CSS output is amazing. It's super tiny, and it's like compressed in a way that only this type of approach can compress, or that CSS and JS technology can compress. It's like a build process thing that can only be done this way because it has access to templates too. And that's cool.
So real story, I had a client, they were shipping like 3.9 megabytes of uncompressed Tailwind to the client. But we got it
from bad to good.
We got them set up.
Yeah.
And it's like 10 kilobytes now. So like, but that was like a tooling breakdown, you know? So you inherit more tooling. Again, I like CSS. I don't like the 20 things I have to do to, you know, write and maintain to write CSS. So that's just, it's sort of the same thing. Like you don't really, and it's like reprogramming you, because you don't really edit Tailwind. You just edit the JSON config. And that's like a big jump in probably what you're used to, you know, like you're kind of not doing it, writing CSS the same way. You can customize Tailwind quite a bit, but it's not the same way as writing your own CSS. So.
No. And isn't it neat to think about, I had a blog post about this recently, about atomic CSS output. It has nothing to do with Tailwind. Imagine you could just write CSS however you want to. Then magic happens, and what goes to production is atomic classes and stuff. Now that appeals to me, because you know what already happens to my authored code? All kinds of stuff, Dave. All kinds of stuff. It gets gzipped. It gets compressed. It gets put on CDNs. All kinds of magic happens between my fingers typing code and what actually goes to browsers, to the point where I have long since stopped caring about that. I want magic to happen to my files to make good performance things happen. And this atomic thing is a very interesting take on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know that it's like my fave, but it is like... Fair it enough. Is interesting. Like, and
you still want hooks too. We had a podcast today I did with Shaw for CodePen Radio, and we were looking at people's custom profiles on CodePen. Like, Dave, yours is as a butt. It farts on you. It's good. It's hilarious.
It's good. It gets me lots of jobs. People just banging down my door to work with the butt guy.
In order to make that happen, we had to put a bunch of hooks all over the HTML that aren't really there for us anymore. They used to be, but now we leave them there in case you need them. So whether we're using CSS modules or CSS and JS, or we go all atomic or something, we can do whatever we want, but the hook is still there.
Am I going to be on a video, like a CodePen Radio video? Is my profile? Oh, good.
Oh yeah. The butt. I got the butt on video today. Well, cause you had to do an extra trick, because you put the butt in a pen, right? The butt farts in a pen, but normally we put like an overlay over the thing, so it doesn't like interfere with stuff, you know, but you had to use custom CSS to remove the overlay so that you could mouse over the butt.
Man.
So you had to double trouble.
I made code. I kind of regret, but also don't. So there. I'm gonna be famous. I'm gonna send it to my mom.
All right, my third one is WordPress Tavern. I think they do darn fine WordPress journalism over there, even though it is owned by Automattic. So grain of salt there. Word comes directly from them, but I find it pretty unbiased. But the team over there does a good job. They cover that Kinsta maybe has been a sponsor here. Not right now, but I can't remember. They launched a free local WordPress development tool. So like Local by Flywheel has one, you know, that's, I feel like, is like way far ahead than this right now. Local is really good and keeps getting better and is super fast and all kinds of stuff. Kinsta, this is their, you know, they find value in it. And honestly, I've told that to other, I've had conversations with other WordPress hosts. I'm like, you know what Flywheel's doing that is super smart and surely gets them tons of customers and they god dang deserve it because it's amazing. They have they are answering not only local development, but deployment too. It's like, come on, duh. Oh, yeah. You know, like ask any developer what they struggle with. It's like,
oh, local development with the WordPress. They have a built-in database manager. That's kind of cool. So
yeah, this has some cool ideas, and they have a couple of talking points in here that are like why they think it's better than local that I don't agree with, but I don't care. I like, now compete, go at it, you two. I will benefit from more
is better. I think it's too, it's like what do you want? And, you know, I know we use local. It's good, but we're kind of bought into their hosting
too. But I use their hosting because they're local, so good.
And
so
it does, it works and stays up. So unless we set it in debug mode. So there you go.
Yeah, that was a weird day. That can't happen anymore though, because we Cloudflare that sucker. That's all. That was my top three. I'll stop there. But that's a fun game.
That's a game we can play every week. Cool. Recurring segment.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by WordPress.com. I wrote a little blog post about this on CSS Tricks recently, sponsored by WordPress.com, of course. Thanks for the support. But it was specifically about the paid business plan on WordPress.com, which is like a couple of tiers up, of course, from the free plan. You know, they have the free plan, which is very generous and robust. You can totally have a free site on WordPress.com, but it has like ads on it, stuff like that. You pay a few bucks a month and then you get a domain name and you can remove the ads and it unlocks a lot of potential. And then, there's another tier, and then the other tier beyond that is the business plan. Now that plan, a way to think about it is four things: plugins, themes, security, and performance. Security is already like, it's on WordPress.com. It's like going to do pretty good. But there's some, you know, like you don't really have to worry about that in particular. But there's extra bonus stuff thrown in there. But one of them that's cool, that's related to security, is the fact that you get backups then too. It's this like immediate rolling real-time backups you have in the site. So even on your WordPress.com site, you're like, oh shoot, I published something that I shouldn't have, or there's something weird happened with comments or whatever. Whatever happened, literally anything, you can roll back in time to a different place, you know, like yesterday or something, and just immediately deploy the site to that state and get it fixed. That's like really powerful stuff. And that's kind of what I mean by security. The first two, plugins and themes, particularly interesting. You know, of course you have themes, right? You just pick the theme. No. You have SFTP access. You can code your own theme and upload it, or like buy a theme and put that one up there, or buy a theme and then customize the heck out of it and do that and set up a deployment process. You have SFTP access to your site on WordPress.com. Relatively new thing, kind of a big deal. And because you have that, you have access to the plugins folder too. Upload whatever you want, whatever plugins you want, run them on WordPress.com. Amazing. And then the performance thing is that not every single solitary site on WordPress.com is full all the way through CDN powered, you know, on their most powerful global CDN. But on the business plan, you absolutely are. So if you get, you know, if you really want the highest perf, get on that plan and do it. So with all those things combined, the business plan is like no brainer for me. Like that's the one to go for on WordPress.com. So just want to make sure you knew all that. Thanks for the support. Speaking of WordPress, yeah, not bad. Jimmy Davis wrote in about, because we were talking about custom post types. I can't remember, but I like use them on CSS Tricks a bunch, but not enough. I am still looking for somebody, by the way, to like maybe help with some of that stuff, clean up my handling of my custom functionality plugin and stuff like that. I have a couple other like quirky crap that I just know I won't get around to unless I hire somebody. Mm. So still looking, but he was wondering about, you know, cause you, in order to use a custom post type in WordPress, you have to like declare it.
Yeah. Okay.
So where do you declare it in PHP? Mm-hmm. And you could do it in functions.php because it's not that many lines of code. It's probably 12 on average, you know, like what's the name of it? What's some verbs that describe it? What features does it support? Yada, yada, yada. So it's very tempting to just copy and paste it into the functions.php file, which is certainly there on your theme anyway. Hey, you got a custom post type. Good for you. The thing that people bitch about or whatever, or think is a bad idea with that is that those are in your theme. So the second you change themes, your custom post type disappears.
Explosion.
That's scary. But the reason that doesn't, that never happens to me is this is the only time I ever make a new theme, Shop Talk Show, any of my CodePen blog, CSS, what I do is I right click on the folder of the theme I'm currently working on and duplicate it. And then I start editing another theme. So I'd never lose any of that code. It just evolves. So I don't really think it's that big of a problem. But if that's not the case for you and you do like pick random themes, and I have sites like this too. In fact, just the other day on my email blog, I just like randomly picked a new theme because I could, because it doesn't, I don't have any custom code running on that site. So I'm just kind of free to just randomly pick themes. I was able to do that. But anyway, if that's you and you switch themes a lot more, the answer is then to put something like your custom post type declarations into a plugin, which is really not that much more code either. A little extra boilerplate around it, but that's it. And then activate that plugin, and that won't change as you change your themes. So technically, it's a lot smarter. It's a, like, that's the correct way to handle custom post type declarations.
I'd say. No, if you can, yeah, I don't know if you can find a better place for them. Cause
there's only two. I can't think of it.
Wouldn't
it be cool
if there was another folder inside WordPress? I mean,
cause it would be cool too.
Like, you know, by somebody just going on an uninstall spree or something. But
there's like styles of plugins these days. Have you seen that? Like there's another folder called like MU-plugins that are like must use plugins. So they're like classified a little differently. Maybe that would be the classification of them. You know, what's interesting is that, so the custom post types are only PHP, but I'm learning as I use Gutenberg more and more. Gutenberg has this dual system going on where if, let's say you want to register a new block or use a new block in the, which is kind of like JavaScript based, you know, on the front end, you can declare a new block in PHP or JavaScript and they're identical. You just, either one, do whatever you want. Isn't that weird?
Wow.
I think it's weird. I don't know that I dislike it, but it is weird.
I wonder how? I guess some PHP file that eats up React files or something.
Yeah, it's like which one is like the real truth?
I wonder.
Probably JavaScript.
Yeah, probably that's the prototype that PHP just eats. I don't know. Yeah, good question. Yeah. Well, cool.
What else do you got? Do you want another question?
Frederick Rumbach Eklund writes in. Simple question. Sharing links to social networks. Do you know if anybody ever uses them? I know I don't. Of course, the buttons that trigger navigator.share on phones can be tasteful, but I don't know that I would personally ever click a button on a website that says share. And I definitely wouldn't click share on Facebook, etc. Do you have any data on this? There ought to be some studies or something similar, right?
I thought this was a fair point, actually. So navigator.share is relatively new API, right? They call that the web share API.
Yep.
And I think it's cool, don't you? Like it's like it triggers. So if you have an iPhone, I know, like, and you're on in Safari or whatever, there's a little button. I think it's like a square with an arrow pointing out of it or something. That's like the official share button.
Yep.
You know, if you click that, you're going to get that little panel that lines up from the bottom that I find just tremendously useful. It's like, add it to Notion, add it to Things, share it on Message, share it on WhatsApp, share it on Signal. I love that. That's so good. And so Navigator.share on the web like brings that functionality to the web. And that's like genius. Of course I want that. And you can trigger it yourself. You don't have to wait for the browser UI to offer it. You can put it somewhere else. But what do you call it? Like, is it just literally a button that says share? And I think Frederick has a good point that would you click that? Like, how do you, have no idea what it's going to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we need like a standard. And this kind of goes like the hamburger menu. No one knew what it was, you know, but now people do more or less, you know.
Yeah, good point.
It becomes a convention, it becomes used, you know. I think if you just did that little share icon, which is looks kind of like a Git branch icon, you know, like a dot spawning other dots, like you could do that. And but maybe you do need like the word share next to it to, and then if everyone does that, then we kind of get a thing. You know, I think
we should do that.
There should be something, but I think like
I don't mind that one you just mentioned either, the little dot with the other dots. You know, because Git branch is a little more specific in that it has a curved one on the top and stuff. I think it's distinctly different.
Yeah, and
enough.
You know, and that's honestly, that's something I could roll out today in my little post metadata area, you know, just a button with no styles. Yeah. And
then it's not whatever Apple did, so that doesn't hurt.
Right.
Either,
like,
you know?
It's not, yeah, it's not just Apple, it's not just whatever. And what's nice about Navigator Share is like, you just click it and it can go to whatever service they want. Like you're not prescriptive. It's not a Facebook button request. It's not a Twitter button. Like it's whatever they have installed on their phone. That's like so great. And Facebook isn't siphoning data. Twitter's not siphoning data, which is why those whole buttons were created, you know, to track you around the internet.
Well, it's the best. It's the best possible sharing.
It is.
Mechanism.
And my limitation though, this is where, and the usage is really low on share buttons and stuff like that. And like Facebook won't tell you the data because it's so abysmally bad. But like, I think they're not even really like put like buttons on your page anymore. You know, they would rather just keep you in Facebook and make you never leave. So that's a lot easier for them.
They are really out of vogue, aren't they? Those share buttons.
But, you know, on big news sites, they're still there and they're still occupying bandwidth, you know. But the thing about the share API that I find incomplete is the lack of images. And I know that's a feature that's like coming. I think there's like a new files thing, you know, property. But like,
what does that mean?
You know, you're on Facebook or I don't know. You want to like put something on Pinterest, you know, like you can't like select an image to share out or tweet out, you know, like let's say I'm in Giphy and I'm like share with a photo, you know, you can't do that. Like it only does text and a URL, a title, a text and a URL. So that's my like beef with it is the like,
well, that seems like it would evolve.
Yeah. I think they're working on it, but that's my whole thing is like, it's 2021 here. Like you're going to share a photo. You know what I mean?
So the worst thing you can possibly do is go find the buttons that social networks give you and copy and paste their code. They're bad for performance. The reason they exist is for data mining. Everything is bad about them. The second best, you know, whatever, the middle thing is to use like the URL formats they provide. So if you really want to share on Twitter button, you can have an anchor link that says share on Twitter and it posts to like twitter.com/intent/whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it opens up a URL that's like specifically designed just for sharing. That's okay because the performance implications of that are almost none. And then probably even better than that is a navigator.share button because that opens up the native sharing mechanism on most browsers, notably like not Firefox and not Chrome, but it does work on desktop Safari and it definitely works on all mobile browsers. So that's cool, which is kind of where it's most useful anyway. Anyway, I don't know the answer to the, I like Dave's solution that we need to like, it feels like weird timing for it because you'd think this time has already passed, but like we need a share icon that really obviously reads as sharing, that technologically is known as the thing that triggers Navigator, not
yeah,
share.
Yeah, we need a marketing campaign. I do not have the energy for it, but we do need it. So, and I could put a like on my site today. No. You know, like why not? It's just
I could, and I've chosen not to overall. I think I have no share buttons at all. I used to get things all the time that would perplex the crap out of me, Dave. They're like, I wanted to share your article, but there was no sharing buttons on it. Or they would tweet me that. That would be the ultimate one. Or be like, you know how you just crafted a tweet with your fingers? You can do that with a link in it too. You know, it just would blow my mind. And it was sincere. It wasn't even a joke. It was like, I wanted to share it, but I couldn't. I do remember having a conversation with Cassidy Williams about this, which I think it was Cassidy anyway. And there was like she had some like muscle memory built up for using the sharing buttons because it would somehow like give the site more credit or something. Like if you used the official button, it somehow was like, benefited the site more somehow, which I relate to because I remember when Google Plus used to be a thing, it somehow felt satisfying for me to hit plus one mm-hmm. buttons mm-hmm. on sites. And I'd be like, I'm going to give this site a plus one. I don't want to share it. I have nothing to say. I just want to plus one it. And I wouldn't click like on Facebook because then I feel like Facebook is going to make that public somehow or put it in my feed. And I don't want that either. I just want the chillest possible way to plus one something.
Pinterest will tell every single person you've ever met in your whole life that you, whatever, like some
that you like something.
Poster.
Oh my God. So that, you know, and I know Google Plus was a joke and it closed and it was useless, but I always thought somewhere in the back of my head that maybe you would even give them a little SEO juice or something, which then was proven to absolutely not be the case. So that's not it either, but I don't know. Now I feel like I'm just talking for nothing.
No.
We talk for sharing.
I'm making a code pen of the share button right now. So here we go. I'm going to.
Good. Yeah. Do it. See if something cool happens in Edge. Does Edge do something
here.
Cool?
Let's see. Well, I need to add the event listener document query selector button. We're going fast and loose, just query selectoring here. So,
I love query selector. I like how it just it consistently only selects one thing.
See, yeah, I use it all the time. Did you know you can pass like you can go document query selector audio, comma, video, and it'll just select whichever one comes first. Did you know that? Can use comma separated values in query selector. Bingo. And that's how I do picture and playback rate equals 2 on everything. So,
well, that is
document
so cool. Dot
query selector, audio, comma, video, dot playback rate equals 2 all day long.
So it's kind of like it runs 2 of them. And if the first one matches,
yep,
it stops.
Stop on the first match. So you just basically have the same snippet for audio and video. So it's pretty, pretty hot jams over there. So
that is cool.
Pro tip.
I was going to mention that this is just in case, you know, like get some nerd cred in case anybody remembers this. But there was this game, 2005. It was a card game you could buy, but it wasn't a game that you play like me and you against each other. You'd get a random pack of cards and each of the cards had puzzles on them intended to be solved. And if you solved enough of them, the puzzles kind of fit together towards solving a larger puzzle. And there was some aspects of reality twisted into it too. So like the ultimate thing that you could do in this game was find this cube that was literally hidden somewhere on planet Earth. And ultimately, you know, the winner of the cube won like $100,000 or something. So it was kind of a big deal. And it was just this a fun thing to watch. And there was ratings of the cards, right? From easy to hard. The game was called Perplex City, by the way. Perplexity.
Okay.
And there's like 10 ratings of how difficult the card was good, from red all the way to silver were the really hard ones. And there was only a couple of silver cards left in the game that weren't solved. One of them finally got solved. One of them was kind of an accident because it was like a mathematical hypothesis. It's called the Riemann hypothesis that will probably never be solved. So it's like not really a practical thing to solve it. And one of them was just the picture of some dude, Satoshi was his name. Turned out to be Japanese, okay, fella, okay. You know,
and the creator of Bitcoin
and
or different. Okay.
No, just, it turned out to it was always just an absolutely random guy. Had nothing to do with the game, the puzzle, nothing. Somebody just went up to him and be like, hey, will you be the guy in this game? Yeah, cool. There's a picture of him. Japanese characters that translate to find me, and that's it. And so since 2005 until just December of this past year, it took to find the guy. Because it's like, it's a really hard task, you know? And in the end, it required all kinds of computers and stuff and just was a big mess to find him. And somebody finally did it. The trick was that you had to literally find him and be like, are you the guy from the game? And he was, you know, he'd be like, yes. And then you win. I know, wild, right? And I used to play this game. I mean, I never got into like literally searching for the guy, but I remember it all. And it's cool that it took 15 years, 16 years to...
Wow. That's incredible.
It is.
Wow. Hold on. I almost got my button done here. Hold on.
I want to see it.
I'm learning things here. Like, you could put async right there.
Does it trigger at all? And like, if you're in a desktop browser that doesn't know what it is, did you have to wrap it in a little like if navigator dot
share? Yeah, it didn't do nothing. It hates me. So whatever. Test the share button. I don't know, man. This doesn't seem like it works. So
we'll open it in Safari.
Right, let's open it in Safari.
It'll work in Safari.
I have Safari now, so I can open it in there. Opening the technical preview just to make sure. Let's see here.
It'll open a thing in the like the upper right.
Oh, that's I must
like,
have bugs. it's not working.
Whatever.
Or it just doesn't.
You just gotta read the right blog post.
Well, MD.
That's okay. We'll figure it out. Also.
What?
Are you live? Do you need help?
No.
Did you miss a curly brace? Is there a missing button? Period?
Get attribute is not a thing, but it is.
Why do you need attributes? Is that how you pass it?
Well,
the
that's
title?
How, yeah, I was going to pass some text to it, but whatever. Maybe I don't even care about that.
But of course, Jeremy Keith has a great article about how the way that he gets the text is to look at the title tag from the head. The way that you get the description is to look at the meta tag for the description and get that, you know, like it might as well at least try to do that if you don't pass it any text, you know?
Oh, hey, yeah, I got the little drop down in Safari, man. There you go.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
All public, and then there we go. We did it. We solved the internet. Now I have a share button.
See, hired Dave. Literally, he can code a button in five minutes,
man. That's all it took for one button that solves the whole world's problem. You know what I mean? Like, I just solved the whole world's problem.
Well, it kind of does. In the case of sharing, that link isn't just like some crappy link that kind of shares stuff. It's like the best possible.
Yeah, I'm gonna put it into notes and see what it did. Oh yeah, link to the thing. Add my own text. Bingo, bango, chop, chop. We did it.
Did notes expand?
Oh, yeah.
Because I bet it has Slack. I bet it has all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah,
it has
more. I even have a more button, and I can choose. I could set.
Share it to Discord. Let me see what it looks like Discord in Discord.
Was not one of the options it gave me. So.
Oh, boo.
Here. Well, I don't know. What? Here, I can. All right. Here, I can text you. Here, I'll send it in messages to Chris Hoyer.
We got eight.
Okay. Here. And then it's just the URL or whatever. So there you go. And just texted you the URL. So now you have it.
I want to see if it expands. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, did you hear that come in? People? See, I just shared you from my.
Oh, you meta'd it. You shared itself.
Yeah, I shared itself. So there you go.
Oh, and you used the nice icon. Oh, good job.
There you go. We solved it. The share button is what it's called. So there we go. We solved a web problem today on the show. So thank you, listener, for downloading the City Podcast. Are we done? We can be done. Be sure to start favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter for tens of tweets a month. And don't even follow us on Twitter. Just keep hitting that share button. You know what I'm saying? Hit the share button. Go blast it out to your networks. Bam, bam. Just blast it. And, you know, follow us for tens of tweets a month. I can't think of anything else. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
Not really. Shopdocshow.com.